Chapter 19. Soon after dark, Thomas heard a girl screaming. At first, he didn't know what he was hearing, or if maybe it was just his imagination. With the thumps of dry footsteps, the rustling of the packs, the whispers of conversation between heavy breaths, it was hard to tell. But what had started as almost a buzz inside his head soon became unmistakable. Somewhere ahead of them, maybe all the way in the town, but most likely closer, a girl's screams tore through the night. The others had obviously noticed it too, and soon the gladers quit running. Once everyone caught their breath, it became easier to hear the disturbing sound. It was almost like a cat, an injured, wailing cat, the kind of noise that made your skin crawl and made you press your hands to your ears and pray it went away. There was something unnatural about it, something that chilled Thomas inside and out. The darkness only added to the creepiness. Whoever the source, she still wasn't very close, but her shrill screeches bounced along like living echoes, trying to smash their unspeakable sounds against the dirt until they ceased to exist in this world. "You know what that reminds me of?" Minho asked, his voice a whisper with an edge of fear. Thomas knew. "Ben, Albie, me, I guess. Screaming after the griever sting. You got it."
"No, no, no," Frypan moaned. "Don't tell me we're gonna have those suckers out here too. I can't take it."
Newt responded just a couple of feet to the left of Thomas and Eris. "Doubt it. Remember how moist and gooey their skin was. They'd turn into a big dust ball if they rolled around in this stuff." "Well," Thomas said, "if Wicked can create grievers, they can create plenty of other freaks of nature that might be worse. Hate to say it, but that rat-looking guy said things were finally going to get tough."
"Once again, Thomas gives us a cheerful pep talk," Frypan announced.
He tried to sound jovial, but it came out more like a spiteful rub.
"Just saying it how it is," Frypan huffed. "I know, and how it is sucks big time."
"What now?" Thomas asked.
"I think we should take a break," Minho said. "Fill our little tummies and drink up. Then we should book it for as long as we can stand it while the sun is still down. Maybe get a couple of hours sleep before dawn." "And the psycho screaming lady out there?" Frypan asked. "Sounds like she's plenty busy with her own troubles."
For some reason, that statement terrified Thomas. Maybe the others too, because no one said a word as they slipped the packs off their shoulders, sat down, and began eating.
"Man, I wish she'd shut up."
It was about the fifth time Eris had said that as they ran along in the darker than dark night. The poor girl, somewhere out there, getting closer all the while, was still crying her fretful, high-pitched wails. Their meal had been quiet and somber, the talk drifting toward what the Ratman had said about the variables and how their responses to them were all that mattered, about creating a blueprint, about finding the kill zone patterns. No one had any answers, of course, only meaningless speculations. It was odd, Thomas thought. They now knew they were being tested somehow, put through Wicked's trials. In some ways, it felt like they should behave differently because of this, and yet they just kept going, fighting, surviving, until they could get the promised cure. And that was what they'd keep doing. Thomas was sure of it. It had taken a while for his legs and joints to loosen up once Minho got everyone moving again. Above them, the moon was a sliver, barely providing any more light than the stars. But you didn't need to see much to run along flat and barren land. Plus, unless it was his imagination, they were actually starting to reach the lights from the town. He could see that they flickered now, which meant they were probably fires. Which made sense. The odds of having electricity in this wasteland hovered around zero. He wasn't sure when it happened exactly, but suddenly, the cluster of buildings they were running toward seemed a lot closer. And there were a lot more of them than he or anyone else had thought. Taller, too. Wider. Spread out and organized in rows and in an orderly fashion. For all they knew, the place might have once been a major city, devastated by whatever had happened to the area. Could sun flares really inflict that much damage? Or had other things caused it during the aftermath? Thomas was starting to think they'd actually reach the first building sometime the next day. Even though they didn't need the cover of their sheet at the moment, Eris still jogged right next to him, and Thomas felt like talking.
Tell me more about your whole maze thing.
Eris's breaths were even. He seemed to be in just as good shape as Thomas.
My whole maze thing? What's that supposed to mean?
You've never really told us the details. What was it like for you? How long were you there? How'd you get out?
Eris answered over the soft crunch, crunch, crunch of their footsteps on the desert ground.
I've talked with some of your friends, and it sounds like a lot of it was exactly the same. Just girls instead of guys. Some of them had been there for 2 years. The rest had shown up one at a time, once a month. Then came Rachel, then me the next day, in a coma. I barely remember anything, just those last few crazy days after I finally woke up.
He went on to explain what had happened, and so much of it matched what Thomas and the Gladers had been through, it was just plain bizarre. Almost impossible to believe. Eris came out of his coma, said something about the ending, the walls quit shutting at night, their box stopped coming, they figured out the maze had a code, on and on and on until the escape. Which went down almost the same as the Gladers' terrifying experience, except less of the girl group died. If they were tough like Teresa, this didn't surprise Thomas in the least. In the end, once Eris and his group were in the final chamber, a girl named Beth, who'd disappeared days earlier, just like Gally had, killed Rachel right before rescuers came in and whisked them away to the gym Eris had mentioned before. Then the rescuers took him to the place where the Gladers had finally discovered him, what had been Teresa's room. If that was what had happened. Who knew how things worked anymore, after seeing what could happen at the cliff and the flat trans that had taken them to the tunnel? Not to mention the bricked-up walls and the name change on Eris's door. It all gave Thomas a big, fat headache. When he tried to think of Group B and imagine their roles, how he and Eris were basically switched, and how Eris was actually Teresa's counterpart, it twisted his mind. The fact that Chuck had been killed in the end instead of him, that was the only major difference that stood out in the parallels. Were the setups meant to instigate certain conflicts or provoke reactions for Wicked's studies?
It's all kind of freaky, huh?
Eris asked after letting Thomas digest his story for a while.
I don't know what the word for it is, but it blows me away how the two groups went through these trippy parallel experiments, or tests, trials, whatever they were. I mean, if they're testing our responses, I guess it makes sense that we were put through the same thing. Weird, though.
Right when Thomas stopped speaking, the girl in the distance let out a shriek even louder than her now regular cries of pain, and he felt a fresh rush of horror.
I think I know,
Eris said, so quietly Thomas wasn't sure he'd heard him correctly.
Huh? I think I know why there were two groups. Our two groups.
Thomas looked over at him, could barely see the surprising look of calm on his face.
You do?
What then?
Eris still didn't seem very winded.
Well, actually, I have two ideas. One is, I think these people, Wicked, whoever they are trying to weed out the best of both groups to use us somehow. Maybe even breed us or something like that.
What?
Thomas was so surprised he almost forgot about the screaming. He couldn't believe anyone would be so sick.
Breed us? Come on. After going through the maze and what we just saw happen in the tunnel, you think breeding is so far-fetched? Give me a break.
Good that. Thomas had to admit that the kid had a point.
Okay, so what was your other theory?
As he asked it, Thomas could feel the weariness brought on by the run settling in. His throat felt like someone had poured a glassful of sand down his gullet.
Kind of the opposite, Eris responded. That instead of wanting survivors from both groups, they only want one group to live through to the end. So they're either weeding out people from the guys and the girls, or an entire group altogether. Either way,
It's the only explanation I can think of."
Thomas thought about what he'd said for quite some time before responding.
"But what about the stuff the Ratman said? That they're testing our responses, building some kind of blueprint? Maybe it's an experiment. Maybe they don't plan for any of us to survive. Maybe they're studying our brains and our reactions and our genes and everything else. When it's all done, we'll be dead, and they'll have lots of reports to read."
"Hmm," Eris grunted, considering.
"Possibly. I keep trying to figure out why they had one member of the opposite sex in each group.
Maybe to see what kind of fights or problems it would cause. Study people's reactions. It's kind of a unique situation."
Thomas almost wanted to laugh.
"I love how we're talking about this, like we're deciding when we need to stop for a clunk."
Eris actually did laugh, a dry chuckle that made Thomas feel better. Actually made him like the new kid even more.
"Man, don't say that. I've had to go for at least an hour."
It was Thomas's turn to snicker, and right on cue, like he'd heard Eris calling for it, Minho yelled out for everyone to stop.
"Potty break," he said with his hands on his hips as he caught his breath.
"Bury your clunk, and don't do it too close. We'll rest for 15, then we'll just walk a while. I know you shanks can't keep up with runners like me and Thomas."
Thomas tuned out. He didn't need direction on how to use the bathroom, and turned to get a look at where they'd stopped. He took a deep, full breath, and when he relaxed, his eyes caught on something. A dark shadow of a shape a few hundred yards in front of them, but not directly in the path of their journey. A square of darkness against the faint glow of the town up ahead. It stood out so distinctly he couldn't believe he hadn't noticed it until now.
"Hey!" he yelled, pointing toward it. "Looks like a little building up there just a few minutes away, to the right some. You guys see it?"
"Yeah, I see it," Minho responded, walking up to stand next to him. "Wonder what it is."
Before Thomas could respond, two things happened almost simultaneously. First, the haunted screams of the mystery girl stopped, instantly, cut short as if a door had closed on her. Then, stepping out from behind the dark building up ahead, the figure of a girl appeared, long hair flowing from her shadowed head like black silk. Chapter 20. Thomas couldn't help it. His first instinct was to hope it was her, call out to her. To hope that against all odds she was there, just a few hundred yards away, waiting for him.
Teresa?
Nothing.
Teresa? Teresa!
Nothing. The abscess left when she disappeared was still in his head, like an empty pool. But it could be her. Might be her. Maybe something had happened to their ability to communicate. Once the girl had stepped out from behind the building, or more likely from inside the building, she just stood there. Despite being obscured completely by shadow, something about her stance made it obvious she was facing them, staring at them with arms folded.
"You think that's Teresa?" Newt asked,
as if he'd read Thomas's mind. Thomas nodded before he knew what he was doing. He quickly looked around to see if anyone had noticed. Didn't seem so.
"No clue," he finally said.
"You think she was the one screaming?" Frypan asked. "It stopped right when she walked out."
Minho grunted.
"Better bet is she was the one torturing somebody. Probably killed her and put her out of her misery when she saw us coming."
Then, for some reason, he clapped his hands once.
"Okay, then. Who wants to go meet this nice young lady?"
How Minho could be so lighthearted at times like this just baffled Thomas.
"I'll do it," he said, way too loudly. He didn't want to make it obvious that he hoped it was Teresa. "I was just kidding, Shuckface," Minho said. "Let's all go over there. She could have an army of psycho girl ninjas hiding in that shack of hers."
"Psycho girl ninjas?" Newt repeated, his voice showing he was surprised, if not annoyed, by Minho's attitude.
"Yeah. Let's go."
Minho started walking forward. Thomas acted on a sudden and unexpected instinct.
"No."
He lowered his voice.
"No. You guys stay here. I'll go talk to her.
Maybe it's a trap or something. We'd be idiots to all go over there and fall right into it.
And you're not an idiot for going by yourself?
Minho asked.
Well, we can't just walk on by without checking it out.
I'll go. If something happens or gets suspicious, I'll call for help.
Minho paused for a long moment.
All right, go. Our brave little Shank.
He whacked Thomas on the back with his open palm, and it stung.
This is bloody stupid, Newt interrupted, stepping forward.
I'll go with him.
No, Thomas snapped. Just let me do this. Something tells me we need to be careful. If I cry like a baby, come save me.
And before anyone could argue, he took off at a fast walk toward the girl and her building. He closed the distance quickly. His shoes crunched against the gritty dirt and rocks, breaking the silence. He sniffed the raw smells of the desert mixed with a distant scent of something burning, and as he stared at the silhouette of the girl next to the building, he suddenly knew for sure. Maybe it was the shape of her head or body. Maybe it was her stance, the way she held her folded arms crooked to one side, her hip jutting the other direction. But he knew. It was her. It was Teresa. When he reached a point just a few feet from her, right before the faint light would finally reveal her face, she turned around and went through an open door, disappearing inside the small building. It was a rectangle, a slightly tilted roof tenting in the middle, longways. As far as he could tell, it had no windows. Large black cubes were hanging from the corners, speakers perhaps. Maybe the sound had been broadcast, been a fake. That would explain why they could hear it from so far away. The door, a big slab of wood, stood all the way open and rested against the wall. It was even darker inside than out. Thomas moved. He walked through the door, realizing even as he did so how reckless and stupid it might be. But it was her. No matter what had happened, no matter the explanation for her disappearance and refusal to speak with him through their thoughts, he knew she wouldn't hurt him. No way. The air was noticeably cooler inside, almost moist. It felt wonderful. 3 steps in, he stopped and listened in the complete darkness. He could hear her breathing. Teresa? He asked aloud, pushing away the temptation to ask for her in his mind again. Teresa, what's going on? She didn't respond, but he heard a short intake of breath, followed by a halting sniff, as if she were crying but trying to hide it from him. Teresa, please. I don't know what's happened or what they did to you, but I'm here now. This is crazy. Just talk to... He cut off when a light blazed to life with a quick flare that then dulled to a small flame. His eyes naturally went straight to it, to the hand holding a match. He watched as it dropped, slowly, carefully, to light a candle resting on a small table. When it caught and the hand flicked the match until it went out, Thomas finally looked up and saw her. Saw that he'd been right after all. But the short and almost overpowering thrill of seeing Teresa alive was soon cut short, replaced by confusion and pain. She was clean, every part of her. He'd expected her to be filthy like he must be after all this time in the dusty desert. He'd expected her clothes to be ratty and torn. He'd expected greasy hair and a smudged and sunburned face. But instead, she wore fresh clothes. Her clean hair cascaded to her shoulders. Nothing marred the pale skin of her face or arms. She was more beautiful than he'd ever seen her in the maze, than any memories he could pull from the murky goop of what he'd recovered after the changing. But her eyes sparkled with tears. Her lower lip trembled with fear. Her hands shook at her sides. He saw recognition in her eyes, saw that she hadn't forgotten him again, but behind that, there was pure and absolute terror.
Teresa,
he whispered, nodding up inside.
What's wrong?
She didn't respond, but her eyes flickered to the side, then back to him. A couple of tears trickled out, slipping down her cheeks, then falling to the floor. Her lips trembled even more, and her chest lurched with what could only be a stifled sob. Thomas stepped forward, put his hands out to her.
No, she screamed. Get away from me.
Thomas stopped. It was like something massive had just slammed him in the gut. He held his hands up.
Okay, okay.
Teresa, what? He didn't know what to say or ask, didn't know what to do. But that terrible feeling of something breaking inside him intensified, threatened to choke him as it swelled in his throat. He stilled, scared to set her off again. All he could do was lock eyes with her, try to communicate how he felt, beg her to tell him something, anything. A very long moment passed in silence. The way her body shook, the way she almost seemed to struggle against something unseen, it reminded him of how Gally had been acting right after they'd escaped from the glade and he'd entered the room with the woman in the white shirt. Right before everything had gone crazy. Right before he'd killed Chuck. Thomas had to speak or he'd burst.
Teresa, I've thought about you every second since they took you away. You...
She didn't let him finish. Rushing forward, she was in front of him in two long strides and reaching out, grabbing his shoulders, and pulling herself close to him. Shocked, Thomas wrapped his arms around her and squeezed, embracing her so tightly he suddenly worried she couldn't breathe. Her hands found the back of his head, then the sides of his face, making him look at her. And then they were kissing. Something exploded within his chest, burning away the tension and confusion and fear. Burning away the hurt of seconds earlier. For a moment, it felt like nothing mattered anymore, like nothing would matter ever again. But then she pulled away. She stumbled backward until she hit the wall. The terror returned to her face, possessed it like a demon, and then she spoke, her voice a whisper, but laced with urgency.
Get away from me, Tom, she said. All of you need to get away from me. Don't argue. Just leave. Run.
Her neck tensed with the effort to get those last few words out. Thomas had never hurt so badly, but he shocked himself by what he did next. He knew her now, remembered her, and he knew that she was telling the truth. Something wasn't right here. Something was terribly wrong, far worse than he'd first imagined. Staying, arguing with her, trying to force her to come with him, would be a slap in the face to the incredible amount of willpower it must have taken her to break away and warn him. He had to do what she said.
Teresa, he said, I'll find you.
Tears now welling in his own eyes, he turned from her and ran from the building. Chapter 21 Thomas stumbled away from the now dark building, squinting through tear-blurred eyes. He went back to the gladers and refused to answer their questions. Told them they had to go, run, get away as fast as possible. That he'd explain later. That their lives were in danger. He didn't wait for them. He didn't offer to take the pack from Eris. He just started toward the town, sprinting till he finally had to slow down to a manageable pace, blocking the others out, blocking the whole world out. Running away from her was the hardest thing he'd ever done, he had no doubt of it. Showing up at the glade with his memories wiped, adapting to life there, being trapped in the maze, fighting grievers, watching Chuck die, none of it matched what he felt now. She was there. She'd been in his arms. They'd been together again. They'd kissed, and he'd felt something he would have thought impossible. And now he was running away, leaving her behind. Choked sobs burst from him. He groaned, heard the miserable sound of his voice crack. His heart felt a pain that almost made him stop, collapse to the ground, and give up. Sorrow consumed him, and more than once he was tempted to go back. But somehow, he held true to what she'd ordered him to do, and he held on to the promise he'd made to find her again. At least she was alive. At least she was alive. That was what he kept telling himself. That was what kept him running. She was alive. His body could only take so much. At some point, maybe 2 hours after he'd left her, maybe three, he stopped, sure his heart would explode out of his chest if he went one more step. Turning, he looked behind him and he saw shadows moving far in the distance, the other gliders way back. Breathing huge gulps of dry air, Thomas knelt, planted his forearms on one knee, then closed his eyes to rest until they caught up. Minho reached him first, and their leader wasn't happy. Even in the faint light, dawn was just starting to brighten the eastern sky. He visibly fumed as he walked around Thomas three full times before he said anything.
What? Why? What kind of shuck idiot are you, Thomas?
Thomas didn't feel like talking about it, about anything. When he didn't answer, Minho knelt down next to him.
How could you do that? How could you just come out of there and take off like that, without explaining anything? Since when is that how we do things? You slinthead!
He let out a big sigh and fell back to sit on his butt, shaking his head.
Sorry, Thomas finally muttered. It was kind of traumatizing.
The other gliders had reached them by now, half of them doubling over to catch their breaths, the other half pressing in to hear what Thomas and Minho were talking about. Newt was right there, but he seemed content to let Minho do all the digging to find out what had happened.
Traumatizing? Minho asked. Who did you see in there? What did they say?
Thomas knew he had no choice. This wasn't something he could or should keep from the others.
It was Teresa.
He expected gasps, exclamations of surprise, accusations of being a freaking liar. But in the silence that followed, you could hear the morning winds scuttle across the dusty lands surrounding them.
What?
Minho finally said.
You're serious?
Thomas simply nodded, staring at a triangular-shaped rock on the ground. The air had brightened considerably in just the last few minutes. Minho was understandably shocked.
And you left her there? Dude, you need to start talking and tell us what happened.
As much as it pained him, as much as the memory of it tore at his heart, Thomas told the story. Seeing her, how she trembled and cried, how she acted like Gally, almost possessed, before he killed Chuck, the warning she'd given. He told it all. The only thing he left out was the kiss.
Wow,
Minho said in a weary voice, somehow wrapping it all up with that one simple word. Several minutes passed. The dry wind scratched across the ground, filling the air with dust as the bright orange dome of the sun crested the horizon and officially started the day. No one spoke. Thomas heard sniffs and breaths and a few coughs, the sounds of people drinking from their water bags. The town seemed to have grown during the night, its buildings stretching toward the cloudless, purple-blue sky. It would only take another day or two to reach it.
It was some kind of trap, he finally said.
I don't know what would have happened, or how many of us would have died. Maybe all of us. But I could see that there wasn't any doubt in her eyes when she broke away from whatever restrained her. She saved us, and I bet they make her... He swallowed. I bet they make her pay for it.
Minho reached out and squeezed Thomas's shoulder. Dude, if those shuck wicked people wanted her dead, she'd be rotten under a big pile of rocks. She's just as tough as anybody else, maybe tougher. She'll survive.
Thomas took in a deep pull of air and let it out. He felt better. Impossibly, he felt better. Minho was right.
I know.
Somehow I know. Minho stood up.
We should have stopped a couple of hours ago to get some sleep, but thanks to Mr. Desert Runner down here,
he lightly whacked Thomas in the head,
we ran ourselves ragged till the freaking sun came back up. I still think we need to rest for a while. Do it under the sheets, whatever, but let's try.
It ended up being no problem at all for Thomas. The brightening sun making the backs of his eyelids a murky, black-splotched crimson, he fell asleep instantly, a sheet pulled all the way over his head to protect him from sunburn. And from his troubles. Chapter 22 Minho let them sleep for almost 4 hours. not that he had to wake many people up. The rising and intensifying sun raged its heat down on the land, and it became unbearable, impossible to ignore. By the time Thomas was up and had the food repacked after breakfast, sweat already drenched his clothes. The smell of body odor hung over them like a stinky mist, and he just hoped he wasn't the worst culprit. The showers back at the dorm seemed like pure luxury now. The Gladers remained sullen and quiet as they readied for the journey. The more Thomas thought about it, the more he realized that there wasn't much to be happy about. Still, two things kept him going, and he hoped they did the same for the others. First, an overwhelming curiosity to find out what was in that stupid town. It looked more and more like a city as they got closer. And second, the hope that Teresa was alive and well. Maybe she'd gone through one of those flat trans things. Maybe she was ahead of them now. In the city, even. Thomas felt a swell of encouragement. "Let's go," Minho said when everybody was ready. Then they were off. Across the dry and dusty land they walked. No one needed to say it, but Thomas knew everyone was thinking the same thing. They no longer had the energy to run while the sun was up, and even if they did, they didn't have enough water to keep them alive at a faster pace. So they walked, sheets held over their heads. As food and water dwindled, more of the packs became available to use for protection from the sun, and fewer gladers had to walk in pairs. Thomas was one of the first to be alone, probably because no one wanted to talk to him after hearing the story about Teresa. He certainly wasn't going to complain. Solitude was bliss for now. Walking. Breaks for food and water. Walking. Heat like a dry ocean through which they had to swim. That wind, blowing stronger now, bringing more dust and grit than relief from the heat. It whipped at the sheets, made it harder to keep them in place. Thomas kept coughing and rubbing chunks of accumulated grime from the corners of his eyes. He felt as if every swallow of water only made him want more, but their supplies had reached dangerously low levels. If there wasn't fresh water in the city when they reached it, there was no good way for him to finish that line of thought. They kept going, each step becoming just a little more agonizing, and quiet set in. No one talked. Thomas felt like even saying a couple of words would expend too much energy. It was all he could do to put one foot in front of the other, over and over and over, staring lifelessly at their goal, the ever-nearing city. It was as if the buildings were alive, growing right before their eyes as they got closer. Soon, Thomas could see what had to be stone, windows glimmering in the sunlight. Some seemed to be broken, but far less than half. From Thomas's vantage point, the street seemed empty. No fires burned during the day. As far as he could tell, not one tree or any other kind of plant existed in the place. How could it, in this climate? How could people possibly live there? How would they grow food? What would they find? Tomorrow. It had taken longer than he'd thought, but Thomas had no doubt they'd reach the city tomorrow. And though they'd probably be better off going around it, they had no choice. They needed to replenish their supplies. Walking. Breaks. Heat. When nightfall finally came, the sun disappearing below the far western horizon at a maddeningly slow pace, the wind picked up even more, and this time brought the slightest chill. Thomas enjoyed it, grateful for any relief from the heat. By midnight, however, when Minho finally called on them to stop and get more sleep, the city and its now burning fires ever closer, the wind had become even stronger. It blew in gales, whipping and curling with increasing power. Soon after they stopped, as Thomas lay on his back, sheet tucked around him and pulled up tightly to his chin, he looked up at the sky. The winds were almost soothing, lulling him to sleep. Just as his mind got hazy from exhaustion, the stars seemed to fade away, and sleep brought him another dream. He's sitting in a chair, 10 or 11 years old. Teresa, she looks so different, so much younger, yet it's still clearly her, sits across from him, a table between them. She's about his age. No one else is in the room. A dark place with only one light, a dull square of yellow in the ceiling directly overhead.
Tom, you need to try harder, she says.
Her arms are folded, and even at this younger age, it's a look he doesn't find surprising. It's very familiar, as if he has already known her a long time.
I am trying.
Again, it's him speaking, but not really him. It doesn't make sense.
They'll probably kill us if we can't do this.
I know.
Then try.
I am.
Fine, she says.
You know what? I'm not speaking out loud to you anymore. Never ever again until you can do it.
But not inside your mind either.
She's talking in his head. That trick that still freaks him out and he still can't reciprocate.
Starting now.
Teresa, just give me a few more days. I'll get it. She doesn't respond.
Okay, just one more day.
She only stares at him. Then, not even that. She looks down at the table, reaches out, and starts scratching the spot in the wood with her fingernail.
There's no way you're not going to talk to me.
No response. And he knows her, despite what he just said. Oh, he knows her. Fine, he says. He closes his eyes, does what the instructor told him to do, imagines a sea of black nothingness, interrupted only by the image of Teresa's face. Then, with every last bit of willpower, he forms the words and throws them at her.
You smell like a bag of crap.
Teresa smiles, then replies in his mind.
So do you.
Chapter 23. Thomas woke up to wind beating at his face and hair and clothes. It felt like invisible hands were trying to rip them off. It was still dark, and cold, too, his whole body shivering from it. Getting up on his elbows, he looked around, hardly able to see the huddled shape sleeping near him, their sheets pulled tightly against their bodies. Their sheets. He let out a frustrated yelp, then jumped to his feet. At some point in the night, his own sheet had slipped loose and flown off. With the tearing wind, it could be 10 miles away by now.
Shuck it, he whispered.
The howl of the wind stole the words before he could even hear them. The dream came back to him, or was it a memory? It had to be. That brief glimpse into a time when he and Teresa had been younger, learning how to do their telepathy trick. He felt his heart sink a little, missing her, feeling guilt over yet more proof that he'd been part of Wicked before going to the maze. He shook it off, not wanting to think about it. He could block it out if he tried hard enough. He looked up at black sky, then sucked in a hurried breath as the memory of the sun vanishing from the glade came rushing back. That had been the beginning of the end. The beginning of the terror. But common sense soon calmed his heart. The winds. The cool air. A storm. It had to be a storm. Clouds. Embarrassed, he sat back down, then lay on his side and curled into a ball, his arms wrapped around himself. The cold wasn't unbearable, just a vast change from the horrible heat of the last couple of days. He probed his mind and wondered about the memories he'd had lately. Could they be lingering results of the changing? Was his memory coming back? The thought gave him mixed feelings. He wanted his memory block finally cracked for good, wanted to know who he was, where he came from. But that desire was tempered by fear of what he might find out about himself, about his role in the very things that had brought him to this point, that had done this to his friends. He needed sleep desperately. The wind a constant roar in his ears. He finally slipped away, this time to nothing. The light woke him to a dull, gray dawn that finally revealed the thick layer of clouds covering the sky. It also made the endless expanse of desert around them look even more dreary. The city was so close now, only a few hours away. The buildings really were tall. One of them even stretched up and disappeared in a low-hanging fog. And the glass in all those broken windows was like jagged teeth and mouths opened to catch food that might be flying about in the stormy wind. The gusty air still tore at him, and a thick layer of dirt seemed forever baked onto his face. He rubbed his head, and his hair felt stiff with wind-dried grime. Most of the other gladers were up and about, taking in the unexpected shift in the weather, deep in conversations he couldn't hear. There was only the roar in his ears. Minho noticed him awake and came over. He leaned into the wind as he walked, his clothes flapping around him.
"About time you woke up!"
he was fully shouting. Thomas rubbed the crust out of his eyes and got to his feet.
"Where'd this all come from?" he yelled back. "I thought we were in the middle of a desert!"
Minho looked up at the roiling gray mass of clouds, then back at Thomas. He leaned closer to speak directly in his ear.
"Well, I guess it has to rain in the desert sometime. Hurry and eat. We gotta get going. Maybe we can get there and find a place to hide before we're soaked by the storm.
What if we get there and a bunch of cranks try to kill us?
Then we'll fight 'em."
Minho frowned as if disappointed that Thomas had asked such a stupid question.
"What else you want to do? We're almost out of food and water."
Thomas knew Minho was right. Plus, if they could fight dozens of grievers, a bunch of half-mad, starved sicklings shouldn't be too much of a problem.
"All right, then. Let's go. I'll eat one of those granola things while we walk."
A few minutes later, they were once again heading for the city, the gray sky above them ready to burst and bleed water at any moment. They were only a couple of miles away from the closest buildings when they came across an old man lying in the sand on his back, wrapped in several blankets. Jack had been the one to spot him first, and soon Thomas and the others were packed in a circle around the guy, staring down at him. Thomas's stomach turned as he studied the man more closely, but he couldn't look away. The stranger had to be 100 years old, though it was hard to tell. The wear and tear of the sun might have made him just look that way. Wrinkled, leathery face, scabs and sores where his hair should have been. Dark, dark skin. He was alive, breathing deeply, but he gazed at the sky with an emptiness in his eyes, as if he was waiting for some god to come down and take him away, end his miserable life. He showed no sign he'd even noticed the glader's approach.
"Hey, old man!"
Minho shouted, always the tactful one.
"What are you doing out here?"
Thomas had a hard enough time hearing the words over the ripping wind. He couldn't imagine that the ancient guy could make anything out. But was he blind as well? Maybe. Thomas nudged Minho out of the way and knelt down right beside the man's face. The melancholy there was heartbreaking. He held his hand out and waved it right above the old guy's eyes. Nothing. No blink, no movement. It was only after Thomas pulled his hand back that the man's eyelids slowly drooped closed, then open again, just once.
"Sir?"
Thomas asked.
"Mister?"
The words sounded strange to him, conjured up from the murky memories of his past. He certainly hadn't used them since being sent to the glade in the maze.
"Can you hear me? Can you talk?"
The man did that slow blink again, but didn't say anything. Newt knelt next to Thomas and spoke loudly over the wind.
"This guy's a bloody gold mine if we can get him to tell us stuff about the city. Looks harmless, probably knows what to expect when we go in there."
Thomas sighed.
"Yeah, but he doesn't even seem to be able to hear us, much less have a long talk." "Keep trying,"
Minho said from behind them.
"You're officially our foreign ambassador, Thomas. Get the dude to open up and tell us about the good old days."
For some odd reason, Thomas wanted to say something funny back, but he couldn't think of anything. If he'd been funny in his old life, every scrap of humor had certainly vanished in the memory swipe.
"Okay," he said.
He scooted as close to the man's head as he could, then positioned himself so their eyes were square, just a couple of feet apart.
"Sir, we really need your help."
He felt bad for shouting, worried the old man might take it the wrong way, but he had no choice. The wind was gusting stronger and stronger.
"We need you to tell us if it's safe to go inside the city."
We can carry you there if you need help yourself. Sir? Sir?
The man's dark eyes had been looking past him, up at the sky, but now they shifted slowly until they focused on his. Awareness filled them like dark liquid poured slowly into a glass. His lips parted, but nothing came out except a small cough. Thomas's hopes lifted.
My name is Thomas. These are my friends. We've been walking through the desert for a couple of days, and we need more water and food. What do you...
He trailed off when the man's eyes flicked back and forth, a sudden hint of panic there.
It's okay. We won't hurt you, Thomas quickly said. We're the good guys, but we'd really appreciate it if...
The man's left hand shot out from beneath the blankets, wrapped around him, and clasped Thomas's wrist, gripping it with a strength far greater than seemed possible. Thomas cried out in surprise and instinctively tried to pull his arm free, but couldn't. He was shocked by the man's strength. He could barely budge against the man's iron manacle of a fist.
Hey! He shouted. Let go of me!
The man shook his head, those dark eyes full more of fear than any kind of belligerence. His lips parted again, and a rough, indecipherable whisper rose from his mouth. He didn't loosen his grip. Thomas gave up the struggle to free his arm. Instead, he relaxed and leaned forward to put his ear close to the stranger's mouth.
What did you say? He shouted.
The man spoke again, a dry rasp that was unsettling, spooky. Thomas caught the words storm and terror and bad people. None of them sounded very inspiring.
One more time! Thomas yelled,
his head still cocked so his ear rested only inches above the man's face. This time, Thomas understood most of it, missing only a few words.
Storm coming, full of terror, brings out, stay away, bad people.
The man shot up into a sitting position, his eyes full and white around his irises.
Storm, storm, storm.
He didn't stop, repeating the word over and over. A mucus-thick strand of saliva finally crested over his bottom lip and swung back and forth like a hypnotist's pendulum. He released Thomas's arm, and Thomas scooted back on his butt to get away. Even as he did so, the wind intensified, seemed to go from strong gusts to outright hurricane-strength gales of terror, just like the man had said. The world was lost in the sound of roaring, screaming air. Thomas felt as if his hair and clothes might rip off at any second. Almost all of the glider's sheets went flying, flapping over the ground and into the air like an army of ghosts. Food skittered in all directions. Thomas got to his feet, an almost impossible task with the wind trying to knock him over. He stumbled forward several feet until he leaned back into it. Invisible hands held him up. Minho stood nearby, frantically waving his arms as he tried to get everyone's attention. Most saw and gathered around him, including Thomas, who fought off the panic creeping along his insides. It was only a storm, far better than grievers or cranks with knives or ropes. The old man had lost his blankets to the wind, and he huddled now in the fetal position, his skinny legs squeezed against his chest, eyes closed. Thomas had the fleeting thought that they should carry him someplace safe, save him for at least attempting to warn them about the storm. But something told him the man would fight tooth and nail if they tried to touch him or pick him up. The gliders were now packed together. Minho pointed at the city. The closest building was within a half hour if they ran at a good pace. The way the wind tore at them, the way the clouds above thickened and churned and bruised to a deep purple, almost black, the way dust and debris flew through the air, reaching that building, seemed the only sane choice. Minho started running. The others fell in, and Thomas waited to bring up the rear, knowing that was what Minho wanted him to do. He finally broke into a brisk jog, glad they weren't going directly into the wind. Only then did a few of the words the old man had said pop into his mind. They made him break into a sweat that quickly evaporated, leaving his skin dry and salty. Stay away. Bad people. Chapter 24. As they approached the city, it became harder for Thomas to actually see it. The dust in the air had thickened into a brown fog, and he felt it in every breath. It was crusting in his eyes, making them water and turning into goop that he had to keep wiping away. The large building they were shooting for had become a looming shadow behind the cloud of dust, towering taller and taller like a growing giant. The wind had gained a rough edge, pelting him with sand and grit until it hurt. Every once in a while, a larger object would fly by, scaring him half out of his wits. A branch, something that looked like a small mouse, a piece of roofing tile, and countless scraps of paper, all swirling through the air like snowflakes. Then came the lightning. They'd have the distance to the building, maybe more than that, when the bolts came from nowhere, and the world around him erupted in light and thunder. They fell from the sky in jagged streaks, like bars of white light, slamming into the ground and throwing up massive amounts of scorched earth. The crushing sound was too much to bear, and Thomas's ears began to go numb, the horrific noise fading to a distant hum as he went deaf. He kept running, almost blind now, unable to hear, barely able to see the building. People fell and got back up. Thomas stumbled but caught his balance. He helped Newt regain his feet, then Frypan, pushed them forward as he kept on. It was only a matter of time before one of the thick daggers of lightning struck someone and fried them to a blackened char. His hair stood on end despite the ripping wind, the static in the air raging and prickly as flying needles. Thomas wanted to scream, wanted to hear his own voice, even if it was only the dull vibrations inside his skull. But he knew the dust-riddled air would choke him. It was hard enough to take short, quick breaths through his nose, especially with the storm of lightning crashing to the ground all around them, singeing the air, making everything smell like copper and ash. The sky darkened further, the dust cloud thickened. Thomas realized he couldn't see everyone anymore, just those few directly in front of him. Light from the strikes flashed against them, a short burst of brilliant white illuminating them for the briefest instant. It all added together to blind Thomas even more. They had to reach that building. They had to get there, or they wouldn't last much longer. And where was the rain, he wondered. Where was the rain? What kind of a storm was this? A bolt of pure white zigzagged from the sky and exploded on the ground right in front of him. He screamed but couldn't hear himself, squeezing his eyes shut as something, some burst of energy or wave of air, threw him to the side. He landed flat on his back, the breath knocked from his chest, as a spray of dirt and rocks rained down on him. Spitting, wiping at his face, he gulped for air as he scrambled onto his hands and knees, then his feet. The air finally flowed, and he pulled it deep into his lungs. He heard a ringing now, a steady, high-pitched buzz that felt like nails in his eardrums. The wind tried to eat his clothes. Dirt stung his skin. Darkness swirled around him like living night, broken only by the flashes of lightning. Then he saw it. A horrific image made even spookier by the on-again, off-again source of light. It was Jack. He lay on the ground inside a small crater, writhing as he clutched his knee. There was nothing below that. Shin, ankle, and foot obliterated by the burst of pure electricity from the sky. Blood that looked like black tar gushed from the hideous wound, making a paste of horror with the dirt. His clothes had been burned off, leaving him naked, injuries spreading across his whole body. He had no hair, and it looked like his eyeballs had... Thomas spun around and collapsed to the ground, coughing as he spit up everything in his stomach. There was nothing they could do for Jack. No way. Nothing. But he was still alive. Though the thought shamed him, Thomas was glad he couldn't hear the screams. He didn't know if he could bear to even look at him again. Then someone was grabbing him, pulling him to his feet. Minho. He said something, and Thomas focused enough to read his lips. We have to go. Nothing we can do. Jack, he thought. Oh, man, Jack. Stumbling, his stomach muscles sore from throwing up, his ears ringing painfully, in shock from the terrible sight of Jack ripped to shreds by lightning, he ran after Minho. He saw lumps of shadow to the left and right, other gladers, but only a few. It was too dark to see very far, and the lightning came and went too fast to reveal much. Only dust and debris and that looming shape of the building almost on top of them now. They'd lost any hope of organization or staying together. It was each glader for himself now. They just had to hope everyone could make it. Wind. Explosions of light. Wind. Choking dust. Wind. Ringing in his ears. Pain. Wind. He kept going, his eyes glued to Minho just a few steps ahead of him. He didn't feel anything for Jack. He didn't care if he was permanently deaf. He didn't care about the others anymore. The chaos around him seemed to siphon away his humanity, turn him into an animal. All he wanted was to survive, make it to that building, get inside, live, gain another day. Searing white light detonated in front of him, throwing him through the air again. Even as he flew backward, he screamed, tried to regain his footing. The explosion had happened right where Minho was running. Minho! Thomas landed with a jarring thump that felt like every joint in his body came loose, then popped back into place. He ignored the pain, got up, ran forward, his vision full of darkness mixed with blurry afterimages, amoebas of purplish light. Then he saw flames. It took a second for his brain to compute what he was seeing. Rods of fire dancing about like magic, hot tendrils whipping to the right from the wind. Then it all collapsed to the ground, a heap of thrashing flame. Thomas reached it and understood. It was Minho. His clothes were on fire. With a shriek that sent sharp pains through his head, he fell to the ground next to his friend. He dug into the earth, thankfully loose from the explosion of electricity that hit it, and shoveled it on top of Minho with both hands, scooping frantically. Aiming for the brightest points of flame, he made progress as Minho helped by rolling around and beating at his upper body with both hands. In a matter of seconds, the fire went out, leaving behind charred clothing and countless angry wounds. Thomas was glad he couldn't hear the wails of agony that appeared to be coming from Minho. He knew they didn't have time to stop, so Thomas grabbed their leader by the shoulders and dragged him to his feet. "Come on!" Thomas shouted, though the words felt like a couple of noiseless throbs in his brain. Minho coughed, winced again, but then nodded and wrapped one of his arms around Thomas's neck. Together they moved as fast as they could toward the building, Thomas doing most of the work. All around them, the lightning continued to fall like arrows of white fire. Thomas could feel the silent impact of the explosions, each one rattling his skull, shaking his bones. Flashes of light all around. Past the building toward which they stumbled and struggled, even more fires had sprung up. Two or three times he saw lightning make direct contact with the upper reaches of a structure, sending a rain of bricks and glass falling to the streets below. The darkness began to take on a different tone, more gray than brown, and Thomas realized that the storm clouds must have really thickened and sunk toward the ground, pushing the dust and fog out of their way. The wind had lessened slightly, but the lightning seemed stronger than ever. Gladers were to the left and right, all heading in the same direction. They seemed fewer in number, but Thomas still couldn't see well enough to know for sure. He did spot Newt, then Frypan, and Eris. All of them looking as terrified as he felt, running, all eyes riveted to their goal, now just a short distance away. Minho lost his footing and fell, slipped from Thomas's grip. Thomas stopped, turned around, pulled the burnt boy back to his feet, reset Minho's arm around his shoulder. Gripping him around the torso with both arms now, he half-carried, half-pulled him along. A blinding arc of lightning went right over their heads, pummeled to the earth behind them. Thomas didn't look, kept moving. A glader fell to his left. He couldn't tell who it was, didn't hear the scream he knew must have come.
Another boy fell to his right, got back up. A blast of lightning, just ahead and to the right. Another to the left, one straight ahead. Thomas had to pause, blinking viciously until his sight came back. He started up again, yanking Minho along with him. And then they were there, the first building of the city. In the gripping darkness of the storm, the structure was all gray, massive blocks of stone, an arch of smaller bricks, half-broken windows. Aris reached the door first, didn't bother to open it. It had been made of glass that was mostly gone, so he carefully smashed out the remaining shards with his elbow. He waved a couple of gladers past, then went in himself, swallowed by the interior. Thomas made it just as Newt did and gestured for help. Newt and another boy took Minho from him, carefully dragged him backward over the threshold of the open entrance, his feet hitting the sill as they pulled him through. And then Thomas, still in shock over the sheer power of the lightning bursts, followed his friends, stepping into the gloom. He turned to look just in time to see the rain start falling outside, as if the storm had finally decided to weep with shame for what it had done to them. Chapter 25. The rain fell in torrents, like God had sucked up the ocean and spit it out over their heads in fury. Thomas sat in the exact same place for at least 2 hours as he watched it. He huddled against the wall, exhausted and sore, willing his hearing to come back. It seemed to be working. What had been a complete throb of silence had decreased its pressure, and the ringing had gone away. When he coughed, he thought it was more than just a vibration he felt. He heard a trace of it, and in the distance, as if from the other side of a dream, came the steady drumming sound of the rain. Maybe he wouldn't be deaf after all. The dull gray light coming from the windows did little to fight off the cold darkness inside the building. The other gladers sat hunched up or lying on their sides around the room. Minho was curled up in a ball at Thomas's feet, barely moving. It looked as if every shift sent waves of burning pain through his nerves. Newt was there also, close, as was Frypan. But no one tried to talk or get things organized. No one counted off the gladers or tried to figure out who was missing. They all sat or lay as lifeless as Thomas, probably pondering the same thing he was. What kind of messed up world could create a storm like that? The soft thrum of the rain grew louder until Thomas had no more doubt. He could really hear it. It was a soothing sound, despite everything, and he finally fell asleep. By the time he woke up, his body so stiff it felt like glue had dried in his veins and muscles, all the machinery in his ears and head was back to fully functional. He heard the heavy breaths of sleeping gladers, heard the whimpering moans from Minho, heard the now-pounding deluge of water slamming into the pavement outside. But it was dark, completely. At some point, night had fallen. Pushing away his discomfort, letting the exhaustion take over, he shifted until he lay flat, his head propped on someone's leg. Then he was asleep again. Two things woke him up for good. The glow of sunrise and a sudden rush of silence. The storm was over, and he'd slept through the night. But even before he felt the stiffness and soreness he expected, he felt something much more overpowering. Hunger. The light came through the broken windows and dappled the floor around him. He looked up to see a ruin of a building, massive holes ripped in each floor all the way to the roof, dozens of stories toward the sky. It seemed that only the steel infrastructure was keeping the whole thing from coming down. He couldn't imagine what had caused it all to happen, but jags of bright blue seemed to hover above, a sight that seemed impossible last time he'd been outside. Whatever horror that storm had been, whatever quirks in the climate of the earth could cause such a thing, it really did seem to be gone for now. Sharp pain stabbed at his stomach, which groaned, aching for food. He glanced around to see most of the other gladers still asleep, but Newt lay with his back against the wall, staring sadly at a blank spot in the middle of the room. "You okay there?" Thomas asked. Even his jaw felt stiff. Newt slowly turned to him. His eyes were distant until he seemed to snap out of his thoughts and focus on Thomas.
Okay? Yeah. I guess I'm okay. We're alive. Guess that's all that bloody matters anymore.
The bitterness in his voice couldn't have been stronger.
Sometimes I wonder, Thomas murmured. Wonder what?
If being alive matters, if being dead might be a lot easier.
Please, I don't believe for one second you really think that.
Thomas's gaze had lowered while he delivered the depressing sentiment, and he looked up sharply at Newt's retort. Then he smiled, and it felt good.
You're right. Just trying to sound as miserable as you.
He could almost convince himself that it was true, that he didn't feel as if dying would be the easy way out. Newt gestured wearily toward Min-ho.
What bloody happened to him?
Lightning strike somehow caught his clothes on fire. How it did that without frying his brain, I have no idea, but we were able to beat it out before it did too much damage, I think.
Before it did too much damage? I'd hate to see what you think real damage looks like.
Thomas closed his eyes for a second and rested his head against the wall.
Hey, like you said, he's alive, right? And he still has his clothes on, which means it couldn't have burned his skin in too many places. He'll be fine.
Yeah, good that,
Newt replied with a sarcastic chuckle.
Remind me not to hire you as my buggin' doctor anytime soon.
This came from Min-ho, a long, drawn-out groan. His eyes fluttered open, then squinted as he caught Thomas's gaze.
Oh, man, I'm shocked. I'm shocked for good.
How bad is it? Newt asked him.
Instead of answering, Min-ho very slowly pushed himself up to a sitting position, grunting and wincing with every small move. But he finally did it, legs crossed beneath him. His clothes were blackened and ragged. In some places where skin was exposed, raw red blisters peeked out like menacing alien eyeballs. But even though Thomas wasn't a doctor and had no clue about such things, his instincts told him the burns were manageable and would heal pretty quickly. Most of Minho's face had been spared, and he still had all his hair, filthy as it was.
Can't be too bad if you can do that, Thomas said with a sly smile. Shuck it, Min-ho responded. I'm tougher than nails. I could still kick your pony-loving butt with twice this pain.
Thomas shrugged.
I do love ponies. Wish I could eat one right now.
His stomach grumbled and gurgled.
Was that a joke? Min-ho said. Did Thomas, the boring slinthead, actually make a joke?
I think he did, was Newt's response. I'm a funny guy, Thomas said with a shrug.
Yeah, you are.
But Min-ho obviously had already lost interest in the small talk. He twisted his head around to take in the rest of the gladers, most of them asleep or lying still with blank looks on their faces.
How many?
Thomas counted them up. 11. After all they'd been through, only 11 were left, and that included the new kid, Eris. 40 or 50 had lived in the glade when Thomas first arrived, just a few weeks before. Now, there were 11. 11. He couldn't bring himself to say anything out loud after this realization, and the lighter moment only seconds earlier suddenly seemed like pure blasphemy, like an abomination. How could I be part of Wicked, he thought. How could I have been any part of this? He knew he should tell them about his memory dreams, but he just couldn't.
There's only 11 of us, Newt finally said.
There. It was out.
So what, 6 died in the storm? 7?
Min-ho sounded completely detached, as if he were counting how many apples they'd lost when the packs had blown away.
7!
Newt snapped, showing his disapproval of the cavalier attitude. Then, in a softer tone,
7. Unless people ran to a different building.
Dude, Min-ho said. How are we going to fight our way through this city with only 11 people? There could be hundreds of cranks in this place for all we know. Thousands. And we don't have a clue what to expect from them.
Newt let out a big breath,
And that's all you can bug and think about? What about the people who died, Minho? Jack's missing. So is Winston. He never had a chance. And
he looked around.
I don't see Stan or Tim either. What about them?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Minho held his hands up, palms facing Newt.
Slim it nice and calm, brother. I didn't ask to be the shuck leader. You want to cry all day about what's happened, fine. But that's not what a leader does. A leader figures out where to go and what to do after that's done.
Well, guess that's why you got the job then, Newt said.
But then a look of apology washed over his face.
Whatever. Seriously, sorry. I just...
Yeah, I'm sorry too. Minho rolled his eyes, though, and Thomas hoped against hope that Newt didn't notice because his gaze had fallen to the floor again. Luckily, Eris scooted over to join them. Thomas wanted the conversation to go in a different direction.
Ever seen anything like that lightning storm?
The new kid asked. Thomas shook his head because Eris was looking at him. Didn't seem natural. Even in my clunky memories, I'm pretty sure stuff like that doesn't happen normally.
But remember what the Ratman said and that lady told you on the bus, Minho said. Sun flares and the whole world burning like hell itself. That'd screw up the climate plenty enough to make crazy storms like that pop up. I have a feeling we're lucky it wasn't worse.
Not sure lucky's the first word I'd think of, Eris said.
Yeah, well.
Newt pointed at the broken glass of the door where the glow of sunrise had brightened into the same white brilliance they'd grown accustomed to their first couple of days out in the scorch.
Least it's over. We better start thinking about what we're going to do next.
See, Minho said, you're just as heartless as me, and you're right. Thomas remembered the image of the cranks at the windows back at the dorm. Like living nightmares, missing only a death certificate to make them official zombies.
Yeah, we better figure things out before we have a bunch of those crazies show up. But I'm telling you, we gotta eat first. We gotta find food.
The last word almost hurt. He wanted some so badly.
Food?
Thomas pulled in a gasp of surprise. The voice had come from above. He looked up just as the others did. A face looked down at them from the shredded remains of the third floor, that of a young Hispanic man. His eyes were slightly wild, and Thomas felt a belt of tension cinch inside him.
Who are you? Minho shouted.
Then, to Thomas's utter disbelief, the man jumped through the jagged hole in the ceilings, falling toward them. At the last second, he crumpled into a human ball and rolled three times, then sprang up and landed on his feet.
My name is Jorge, he said,
his arms outstretched as if he expected applause for his acrobatics.
And I'm the crank who rules this place.
Chapter 26. For a second, Thomas had a hard time believing that the guy who'd dropped in, literally, was real. He was so unexpected, and there was an odd silliness about what he'd said and the way he'd said it. But he was there, all right. And even though he didn't seem quite as gone as some of the others they'd seen, he'd already confessed to being a crank.
You people forget how to talk?
Jorge asked, a smile on his face that looked completely out of place in the shattered building.
Or are you just scared of the cranks? Scared we'll pull you to the ground and eat your eyeballs out. Tasty. I love a good eyeball when the grub's running short. Tastes like undercooked eggs.
Minho took it on himself to answer, doing a great job of hiding his pain.
You admit you're a crank? That you're freaking crazy? He just said he likes the taste of eyeballs.
This from Frypan.
I think that qualifies as crazy.
Jorge laughed, and there was a definite tone of menace in it.
Come, come, my new friends. I'd only eat your eyes if you were already dead. Of course, I might help you get that way if I needed to. Understand what I'm saying?
All mirth vanished from his expression, replaced with a look of stern warning, almost as if he was daring them to confront him. No one spoke for a long moment. Then Newt asked,
How many of you are here?
Jorge's gaze snapped at Newt.
How many? How many cranks? We're all cranks around here, hermano.
That's not what I meant, and you know it,
Newt replied flatly. Jorge started pacing the room, stepping over and around gladers, taking everyone in as he spoke.
Lot of things you people need to understand about how things work in this city. About the cranks and wicked, about the government, about why they left us here to rot in our disease, kill each other, go completely and utterly insane. About how there's different levels of the flare, about how it's too late for you. The ill is gonna catch you if you don't already have it.
Thomas had followed the stranger with his eyes as he walked around the room, making these horrible statements. The flare. He thought he'd gotten used to the fear of having the disease, but with this crank standing right in front of him, he was more scared than ever, and helpless to do anything about it. Jorge stopped near him and his friends, his feet almost touching Minho. He continued to talk.
But that's not the way it's going to work, comprende? Those who are at a disadvantage are those who speak first. I want to know everything about you, where you came from, why you're here, what in God's name your purpose could be. Now.
Minho let out a low, dangerous-sounding chuckle.
We're the ones at a disadvantage?
Minho swiveled his head around mockingly. Unless that lightning storm fried my retinas, I'd say there are 11 of us and one of you. Maybe you should start talking. Thomas really wished Minho hadn't said that. It was stupid and arrogant, and it could very well get them killed. The guy obviously wasn't alone. There could be 100 cranks hiding out in the torn-up remains of the upper floors, spying on them, waiting with who knew what kind of horrific weapons. Or worse, the savagery of their own hands and teeth and madness. Jorge looked at Minho for a long time, his face blank.
You didn't just say that to me, did you? Please tell me you didn't just speak to me like a dog. You have 10 seconds to apologize.
Minho looked over at Thomas with a smirk.
1, Jorge said. 2, 3, 4.
Thomas tried to shoot a look of warning to Minho, nodded at him.
Do it. 5, 6.
Do it. Thomas finally said aloud.
7, 8.
Jorge's voice was rising with each number. Thomas thought he caught a glimpse of movement somewhere far above, just a blur of streaking shadow. Maybe Minho noticed it too. Any arrogance drained from his face.
9.
I'm sorry, Minho blurted out with little feeling.
I don't think you meant that,
Jorge said. Then he kicked Minho in the leg. Thomas's hands clenched into fists when his friend cried out in pain. The crank must have gotten him right in a burnt spot.
Say it with meaning, hermano.
Thomas looked up at the crank, hated him. Irrational thoughts started swimming through his mind. He wanted to jump up and attack, beat him like he'd beaten Galley after escaping the maze. Jorge pulled his leg back and kicked Minho again, twice as hard in the same spot.
Say it with meaning!
He screamed the last word with a harshness that sounded crazed. Minho wailed, grabbing the wound with both hands.
I'm sorry,
he said between heavy breaths, his voice strained and full of pain. But as soon as Jorge smiled and relaxed, satisfied with the humiliation he'd inflicted, Minho swung an arm out and slammed it into the crank's shin. The man leaped onto his other foot, then fell, crashing to the ground with his own yelp, a shriek that was half surprise, half hurt. Then Minho was on top of him, yelling a string of obscenities Thomas had never heard come out of his friend before. Their leader squeezed his thighs to trap Jorge's body, then started punching.
Minho!
Thomas shouted.
Stop!
He got to his feet, ignoring the stiffness in his joints, the soreness in his muscles. He took a quick glance upward as he made for Minho, ready to tackle him off Jorge's body. There was movement up there, in several places. Then he saw people looking down, people readying to jump. Ropes appeared, dangled over the sides of the jagged holes. Thomas rammed into Minho, sent him sprawling off Jorge's body. They crashed to the ground. Thomas quickly spun to grab his friend, wrapping his arms around his chest and squeezed against his struggles to escape.
There's more of them up there, Thomas screamed in his ear from behind. You have to stop. They'll kill you. They'll kill all of us.
Jorge had staggered to his feet, slowly wiping a thin trail of blood from the corner of his mouth. The look on his face was enough to ram a spike of fear straight through Thomas's heart. There was no telling what the guy would do.
"Wait!" Thomas shouted. "Please, wait!"
Jorge made eye contact with him just as a few more cranks dropped to the ground from above. Some of them did the jump and roll like Jorge had done. Others slid down ropes and landed squarely on their feet. All of them quickly gathered in a pack behind their leader, maybe 15 of them, men and women. A few were teenagers, all filthy and dressed in tattered clothing, most of them skinny and frail-looking. Minho had quit fighting, and Thomas finally loosened his grip. By the looks of it, he had only a few seconds before a dire situation turned into a slaughterhouse. He pressed one hand firmly down on Minho's back, then held the other one up toward Jorge in a conciliatory gesture.
"Please, give me a minute," Thomas said,
urging his heart and voice to calm down.
"Won't do you people any good to hurt us."
"Won't do us any good,"
the crank said. He spit a wad of red goo from his mouth.
"It'll do me a lot of good. That I can guarantee, hermano."
He balled both hands into fists at his sides. Then he cocked his head, barely enough to be noticed. But as soon as he did, the cranks behind him pulled all kinds of nasty things from within the hidden depths of their ragged clothes. Knives, rusted machetes, black spikes that had maybe once been in a railroad somewhere. Shards of glass with red-tinged smudges on their razor-thin tips. One girl, who couldn't have been more than 13 years old, held a splintered shovel, its metal scoop ending in a jagged edge like the teeth of a saw. Thomas had the sudden and absolute certainty that he was now pleading for their lives. The gladers couldn't win in a fight against these people. No way. They weren't grievers, but there also wasn't a magic code to shut them down.
"Listen," Thomas said, slowly getting to his feet, hoping Minho wouldn't be stupid enough to try anything.
"There's something about us. We're not just random shanks who showed up on your doorstep. We're valuable. Alive, not dead." The anger on Jorge's face lessened ever so slightly, maybe a spark of curiosity. But what he said was,
"What's a shank?"
Thomas almost laughed, an irrational response that somehow would have seemed appropriate.
"Me and you. 10 minutes. Alone. That's all I ask. Bring all the weapons you need."
Jorge did laugh at that. More of a wet snort than anything.
"Sorry to burst your bubble, kid, but I don't think I'll need any."
He paused, and it felt like the next few seconds lasted a full hour.
10 minutes, the crank finally said. "Rest of you stay here. Watch these punks. If I give the word, let the death games begin."
He held a hand out, gesturing to a dark hallway that led from the room on the side across from the broken doors.
10 minutes,
he repeated. Thomas nodded. When Jorge didn't move, he went first, walking toward their meeting place and maybe the most important discussion of his life. And maybe the last. Chapter 27. Thomas felt Jorge at his heels as he entered the dark hallway. It smelled of mildew and rot. Water dripped from the ceiling, sending out creepy echoes that for some awful reason made him think of blood.
"Just keep going," Jorge said from behind. "There's a room at the end with chairs. Make even the slightest move against me, everyone dies."
Thomas wanted to turn and scream at the guy, but kept walking.
"I'm not an idiot. You can quit the whole tough guy routine."
The crank only snickered in response. After several minutes of quiet, Thomas finally approached a wooden door with a round silver knob. He reached out and opened it without hesitating, trying to show Jorge that he still had some dignity. Once inside, however, he didn't know what to do. It was pitch black. He sensed Jorge stepping around him. Then there was the loud flumping sound of heavy cloth being whipped in the air. A hot, blinding light appeared, and Thomas had to shield his eyes with his forearms. He could only squint at first, then eventually dropped his arms and was able to see okay.
He realized that the crank had pulled a large sheet of canvas from a window. An unbroken window. Outside, there was only sunlight and concrete.
"Sit down,"
Jorge said, his voice less gruff than Thomas would have expected. He hoped it was because the crank had finally accepted that his new visitor was going to take a rational and calm approach to their situation. That maybe there really was something to this discussion that could end up benefiting the current residents of the dilapidated building. Of course, the guy was a crank, so Thomas had no idea how he'd react. The room had no furniture other than two small wooden chairs and a table between them. Thomas pulled out the one closer to him and took a seat. Jorge sat down on the other side, then leaned forward and put his elbows on the table, hands clasped. His face was blank, his eyes glued on Thomas.
"Talk!"
Thomas wished he could take a second to sift through all the ideas that had run through his mind back in the larger room, but he knew there wasn't any time for that.
"Okay."
He hesitated. One word. So far, not so good. He pulled in a breath.
"Look, I heard you mention Wicked back there. We know all about those guys. It'd be really interesting to hear what you have to say about them."
Jorge didn't budge. His expression didn't change.
"I'm not the one talking right now. You are."
"Yeah, I know." Thomas scooted his chair a little closer to the table. Then he pushed it back and put a foot up on his knee. He needed to calm down and just let the words flow.
"Well, this is hard because I don't know what you know. So I guess I'll just pretend like you're stupid to the whole thing." "I'd strongly advise you never to use the word stupid with me again."
Thomas had to force himself to swallow, his throat tight with fear. "Just a figure of speech."
"Get on with it."
Thomas took another deep breath. "We used to be a group of about 50 guys and a girl." A prick of pain struck him at that. "Now we're down to 11. I don't know all the details, but Wicked is some kind of organization that's doing a whole load of nasty things to us for some reason. We started in a place called the Glade, inside a stone maze surrounded by these creatures called Grievers." He waited, searching Jorge's face for any reaction to his burst of strange information. But the crank showed no signs of confusion or recognition. Nothing at all. And so Thomas told him everything. What it had been like in the maze, how they'd escaped, how they thought they were safe, how it ended up being just another layer of the Wicked plan. He told him about the Rat Man and the mission he'd set them on, to survive long enough to make it 100 miles to the north, to a place he referred to as the Safe Haven. He related how they'd gone down the long tunnel, been attacked by the flying silver goop, made the trek across the initial miles of their journey. He told Jorge the whole story, and the more he talked, the crazier it seemed that he was sharing it. Yet he kept talking because he couldn't think of anything else to do. He did it with the hope that Wicked was just as much the crank's enemy as it was theirs. He didn't mention Teresa, however. She was the only thing he left out.
"So there must be something special about us," Thomas said, trying to wrap things up. "They can't be doing this just to be nasty. What'd be the point?"
"Speaking of points,"
Jorge responded, the first he'd spoken in at least 10 minutes, the allotted time already gone.
"What's yours?"
Thomas waited. This was it. His only chance.
"Well?"
Jorge pushed. Thomas went for it.
"If you help us, I mean if you or maybe just a few of you go with us and help us to make it to the Safe Haven, yeah? Then maybe you'll be safe too."
And this was what Thomas had planned all along, had been building toward, the hope strung out by the Rat Man. "They told us we have the flare, and that if we make it to the Safe Haven, we'll all be cured. They said they have a cure. If you help us get there, maybe you can get it too." Thomas stopped talking and looked at Jorge earnestly. Something had changed, slightly, in the crank's face at that last thing he'd said, and Thomas knew he had won.
The look was brief, but it was definitely hope, quickly replaced with a blank indifference. Yet Thomas knew what he'd seen.
"A cure,"
the crank responded.
"A cure."
Thomas was determined to say as little as possible from here on out. He'd done his best. Jorge leaned back in his chair, the wood creaking as if about to break, and folded his arms. He lowered his eyebrows in a look of contemplation.
"What's your name?"
Thomas was surprised by the question, felt sure, in fact, that he'd already told him, or at least it seemed like he should have told him at some point. But then again, this whole scenario wasn't exactly your typical get-acquainted affair.
"Your name?" Jorge repeated. "I'm assuming you have one, hermano."
"Oh, yeah. Sorry. It's Thomas."
Another flash across Jorge's face, this time something like recognition, mixed with surprise.
"Thomas, huh? You go by Tommy? Tom, maybe?"
That last one hurt, made him think of his dream about Teresa.
"No," he said, probably a little too quickly. "Just Thomas."
"Okay, Thomas. Let me ask you something. Do you have the slightest clue in that squishy brain of yours what the flare does to people? Do I look like someone who has a hideous disease to you?"
That seemed an impossible question to answer without getting your face beaten in, but Thomas went with the safest bet. "No."
"No? No to both questions?"
"Yes, I mean, no. I mean, yes, the answer to both questions is no."
Jorge smiled, nothing but an uptick of the right corner of his mouth, and Thomas thought he must be enjoying every second of this.
"The flare works in stages, muchacho. Every person in this city has it, and I'm not shocked to hear that you and your sissy friends do too. Someone like me is in the beginning, a crank in name only. I caught it just a few weeks ago, tested positive at the quarantine checkpoint. Government's trying their damnedest to keep the sick and the well separate. Ain't working. Saw my whole world go straight in the crap hole. Was sent here. Fought to capture this building with a bunch of other newbies."
At that word, Thomas's breath caught in his throat like a mote of dust. It brought back too many memories of the glade.
"My friends out there with the weapons are all in the same boat as me. But you go and take a nice stroll around the city and you'll see what happens as time goes by. You see the stages, see what it's like to be past the gone, though you might not live to remember it for very long. And we don't even have any of the numbing agent here. The bliss. None."
"Who sent you here?" Thomas asked, saving his curiosity about this numbing agent for later.
"Wicked. Same as you. Only we're not special like you say you are. Wicked was set up by the surviving governments to fight the disease, and they claim that this city has something to do with it. Don't know much else."
Thomas felt a mixture of surprise and confusion, then a hope for answers.
"Who is Wicked? What is Wicked?"
Jorge looked just about as confused as Thomas felt.
"I told you all I know. Why are you asking me that anyway? I thought the whole point here was that you were special to them, that they were behind this whole story you told me."
"Look, everything I told you is the honest truth. We've been promised things, but we still don't know much about them. They don't give us any details. Like they're testing us to see if we can make it through all this clunk, even though we have no idea what's happening."
"And what makes you think they have a cure?"
Now Thomas had to keep his voice steady, think back to what he'd heard from the rat man.
"The guy in the white suit I told you about. He told us it's why we have to make it to the safe haven."
"Mm-hmm,"
Jorge said, one of those noises that sounded like a yes, but meant exactly the opposite.
"And what in the world makes you think they'll let us just ride in on a horse with you and get the cure, too?"
Thomas had to keep playing it nice and calm.
"Obviously, I don't know that at all. But why not at least try? If you help us get there, you have a small chance. If you kill us, you have zero chance. Only a full-gone crank would choose the second option."
Jorge gave that pathetic smile again, then let out a small bark of a laugh.
There's something about you, Thomas. A few minutes ago, I wanted to stab your friend in the eyeballs and then do the same to the rest of you. But I'll be licked if you haven't half convinced me.
Thomas shrugged, trying to keep his face calm. All I care about is surviving one more day. All I want is to make it through this city, and then I'll worry about what comes next. And you know what else? He braced himself to act tougher than he felt. Jorge raised his eyebrows.
What's that?
If stabbing you in the eyeballs could get me to tomorrow, I'd do it right now. But I need you. We all need you. Thomas wondered if he could ever actually do such a thing, even as he said it. But it worked. The crank eyed Thomas for a drawn-out moment, then stuck out a hand across the table.
I believe we have ourselves a deal, hermano, for many reasons.
Thomas reached out and shook, and even though he was filled with relief, it took everything he had not to show it. But then Jorge brought it all crashing down.
I just have one condition. That ratty kid who junked me on the ground? Think I heard you call him Minho?
Yeah? Thomas asked in a weak voice, his heart thumping all over again.
He dies.